Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
Never having taken a risk. Verse says, Tyaktva Sudharmam Chananam Bhujam Harer Bhajana Pakvota Patetato Yadi Yatra Kwa Babadram Abudam Bushakim Kovarta Apto Bhajatam Sudharmata. So this means, Tyaktva means to give up something. Tyaktva Sudharmam Chananam Bhujam Harer. That means to give up something. You give up something that seems like a sure thing in the material world. Maybe there's an opportunity for wealth or becoming better situated materially. But sometimes you have to make a sacrifice in order one thing to get another. So he's saying, make a sacrifice and you give up an opportunity materially to try to see God. Tyaktva sadharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvo tapatet tato yadi. But he says, you're apakva, which means you weren't quite ripe. You weren't ready yet. But you tried anyway. And perhaps patet means you fell down. You tried for it, you jumped for it, but you didn't quite make it. Well, he says something quite extraordinary, and that is, better that you did that, because it's such a beneficial urge and attempt to try to see God, to try to connect with the Supreme Personality of God. Even if you're not quite ready for it, and even if you don't know exactly what to do, if you follow your heart and you try to do it anyway, even if you fail, that's better. Patet tato yadi yatra kwa bhajram abuda mushyakim kovarta apto bhajatam sudharmata. It's better that than if you made a complete success by in the material life. Because after all, you have to give up whatever you attain in the material world anyway, ultimately. And this attempt at taking a risk, it seems like a risk, but actually, if one studies the science of Krishna consciousness, for instance, through the Bhagavad Gita, which is a good place to start, Krishna tells Arjuna, who asks a question, he asks the question, what happens if I try for this, if I try for the on the path of yoga, but I retreat, I fall back, I don't quite make it. Krishna says, your forward progress is counted eternally. You never lose it. So if you tried 1% in this life, and then you didn't make it, you start off in the next life at 1% or at 2%, because that gets counted. And so Dhruva Maharaj, it seems a little rash to run away from home. And however he did it. And on the way to the forest, he didn't even know, having lived in a palace his whole life, what a forest looked like, really, or exactly how to get there. But he just followed the urge and he went for it. And so on the way there, he met a spiritual teacher who instructed him. So this is actually a model for how spiritual life works. One may not know exactly who God is, but if one has an urge, and especially if one has a strong urge to know who he is and to try to see him, then the Srimad Bhagavatam, which I'll read in just a second, is telling us that God, who's within our heart, will make up for that. He'll understand what our intention is, and he can make multiple arrangements to help us so that we can move forward. There's another example of this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a story about an elephant whose name was Gajendra. And Gajendra, if you follow his history back to his previous life, was a king. And Gajendra, as a king, had made an offense to a great sage. Sages apparently can sometimes have short tempers and curse people. However, when they do curse, It's actually a blessing in disguise. Many auspicious beginnings come from getting cursed by sages. So it's not so unusual in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures. And Gajendra was a king in his previous life named Indradyumna. And he had offended a sage, and the sage, not liking what he did, said, "You, in your next life, because you've acted like this," and how did he act? The sage had come to visit the king, and the king was non-responsive because he was engaged in some meditation. So the king said, "Because you treated me like a dumb animal, so in your next life you become a dumb animal, an elephant." So Indradyumna Maharaj took birth as an elephant. But he was a really powerful elephant. He was the king of all elephants. He lived in a heavenly abode, and everyone respected him. And one day, he was going with his family to take bath in a lake, as elephants like to do. Elephants like water. I had a friend who had, in Bangkok, who had a big deity of Ganesh outside his house. And one day, I saw him with a hose, and he was hosing the the Ganesh deity. Said, "What are you doing?" He said, "It's an elephant. Elephants love water." So he went to the lake, and he was bathing, and actually he was spraying water on his family members. And just as he was thinking that life is good, and it was good, a crocodile caught his leg and began to pull him under. And a huge fight ensued between the crocodile and the elephant. Sometimes when I'm in India, because in India you see a lot more species of animals interacting together, and oftentimes they have conflicts. So I always like to see who wins. Monkey against dog, who wins? What do you think? No, usually dog. I've been surprised. Cow against monkey. Cow wins. Monkey against everybody else. Monkey wins. But there's all kinds of interactions. So here it is. Bhagavatam's presenting crocodile against elephant. So in the water, the crocodile wins because he's stronger there. On the land, the elephant would win, but they were in the water. So Gajendra was so powerful, but then he started to realize after fighting for many, many years with this crocodile, I can't win. Have you ever been in a situation where you were struggling and then all of a sudden you thought, I can't win? One person. Pretty good. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. It happens sometimes, right? Say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So he was in that situation. And then and as an and actually, this is the simple formula for advancing spiritually, is to feel oneself to be helpless. Now, actually, you don't have to conjure that feeling. You just have to get in touch with reality. Because it's a fact that I'm helpless. I mean, if I take a moment to think about it each day, how helpless I am, it can invoke in me the same spirit that Gajendra had to call out to the Supreme and say, please help me. For instance, I mean, sometimes in the afternoon, I lie down to take a nap, 17-minute nap. I got it down to a science. That's all I need, 17 minutes a nap in the afternoon. But I lie down, and somehow or other in the afternoon, when I lie down to take a nap on my left side, I can hear my heart beating. Have you ever heard your heart beat? Thank you. And it's sometimes startling to realize the heart's beating and I have really no say over it. I was saying thank you very much for keeping going. I was feeling some gratitude for the heart for actually doing that for me. And then the next thought was, well, it doesn't always have to do that. It could stop at any time. And I don't have any say over it. In fact, when I was in school, it was probably sixth grade or something, they taught us about physiology and that there's voluntary and involuntary muscles. Did you learn about that? And it's kind of interesting, there's involuntary muscles. The heart is one of those. It just beats, but I don't have any say in it. Of course, I don't have any say in when it stops either. So it was a stark realization then when I was listening to my heart and I realized, well, I'm actually pretty helpless. And then I thought about my breath. If you think about your breath, of course, if you stop breathing for some reason, like you're choking on something, then when you get your breath back, you think, well, this is the most precious thing I have. All those other things I was worrying about, they're not really that important. As long as I can breathe, it's okay. But actually, I'm not even breathing, I'm being breathed. I'm really like on a ventilator. If you go and see somebody who's in critical condition in the hospital, sometimes they put them in a special, on a special machine, a ventilator, and it makes them breathe because they're not conscious enough. Their system isn't aware enough to keep the breath going, so the machine keeps the breathing going. But I propose that that's happening now also. Each one of us is on a ventilating machine. Because right now, if you try to stop breathing, we'll just try for a second. Keep doing it. Just another 5 minutes. Eventually, you're going to have, you know, your breath will come back to you. So you can actually notice, one might notice for oneself, that I'm in an environment that's beyond my control. How I'm living and the breath and the heartbeat, these are all beyond my control. And one might realize one's helplessness. I might also, on the other side, develop a sense of being the controller of the world by dint of my special qualifications. For instance, I might have great wealth or enough wealth to make me think that nothing bad can happen because I'll just make up for it with my wealth. Or I might be very beautiful and I'll think that I can shape reality, or reality is shaped around me because of my great beauty and so forth. So Queen Kunti, who's one of the great teachers of bhakti, in a famous verse talks about getting back, and I'm getting back to this principle that anyone can get in touch with at any minute through which one can advance spiritually. She says, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shribir Eda Mana Mada Puman Naivarha Yabidatum Vai Tvama Kinchana Gochuram. She says that if someone thinks I have a qualification as being very beautiful or rich or famous, coming from a good family, or being very learned, and because of that, loses that sense of helplessness, that person then loses touch with his or her spirituality. So she says, Tvama Kinchana Gocharam, that is that if you can get in touch with your helplessness at any moment, then you can actually call out with sincere feeling to the Supreme. It's in that moment. Have you ever heard the saying that there are no atheists in foxholes? First of all, does anybody know what a foxhole is? Two people know. Three, four, five. Foxhole is not a hole that foxes live in, but it's a device used by military infantry people when they're out fighting in an open area where they're vulnerable to attack by the enemy who may be shooting at them. And what they'll do is they carry these shovels and then they'll dig a hole so that they're below the plane of the earth, and then they get inside that hole as the bullets are flying over their head. And that's called a foxhole. And so when somebody's in such a stressful situation where death seems imminent, he or she might then, what the saying is that a person, even who didn't believe in God before, will then suddenly start believing in God because of the imminent danger of death and the feeling of helplessness, which is what I'm getting to. And there's this phrase, akinchana. Everyone can say akinchana. So kinchana means something. And if you put an A in front of it, it means nothing, not anything, not something. So Queen Kunti in her teaching says that if you want to experience advancement in spiritual life, wherever you are right now, then get in touch with this reality that I'm helpless. I don't have anything really to protect me. And then there's only one place to turn, and that is towards a higher power. And so Dhruva didn't know exactly who that higher power was. He just got a little preliminary information from his mother, and he was so determined to come in contact with the Supreme that he just charged out of his house and he went out to find God. And back to Gajendra. Gajendra, in his helpless situation where he realized that he was helpless, just started praying. And the more he prayed, the more everything took shape in his life, in his spiritual life, including the fact that Krishna, in the form of Narayan, came personally and visited him and rescued him from his situation. So this is shaping up to be a formula, and it is presented as a formula for actual advancement in spiritual life. So now Dhruva, back to Dhruva, he's run out of his palace, he's heading for the forest, he's not even sure where the forest is exactly, or what it looks like, or what he's going to find when he gets there, but he takes the risk to go there, based on his trust in what his mother told him, and that is that he'll find God in the forest. Took a big risk, apparently. But there's a way in which one will find, as one advances in spiritual life, that in spiritual life, there's actually no risk and all gain. Whereas in material life, there's all risk and no gain. How does that sit with you all? That was a real question. It's not rhetorical. How does that make you feel? Huh? Not well. Should make you feel great, since you're risking everything for spiritual life. In fact, Prabhupada once was talking about how we have these various prohibitions. Of course, we don't introduce them in the very beginning about what you have to give up. We only talk about what to add to your life to become advanced spiritually. But later on, if somebody wants to have easy access to the Supreme, there are certain things that one must give up. And those include things like intoxication. Because, for instance, if you have an accountant who drinks a lot and then can't find your tax returns, you'll abandon that accountant, I hope. And in a similar way, if we become we take intoxication and we become foolish because of it, then it's very difficult to make spiritual advancement. And there are other prohibitions. One of them is also that our spiritual master mandated for those who take vows is to not gamble. But then he said there are replacements for all these. And so for gambling, he said, the replacement is to take a risk and surrender to God. That seems like a big gamble, doesn't it? Radhisham's laughing. Thank you, Radhisham. But actually, there's no risk and all gain. This is self-realization, to understand that there's no risk in surrendering. And there's all gain. The more I surrender, the more gain there is. But on the material side, there's all risk and no gain. And this is something that comes up in the Bhagavatam. There's a great hero in the Bhagavatam named, he's got two names, Didancha or Didichi. Most people know him as Didichi. And he was so self-realized that when he was asked for charity, has anybody ever asked you for charity? Somebody asked you for donation somewhere? Well, he was asked for a substantial donation. There was a need, actually, amongst the celestials, the devas. They needed to make a special weapon, and they were informed by Lord Vishnu himself that the only place that they could get the materials for that thunderbolt weapon that they needed was from the bones of Didichi. They needed his bones. He was still alive, keep in mind. So Vishnu informed them that you should go ask him for a little donation. Well, what donation? We just need your body. So when they went and asked the Didichi for a donation, he said, how can I help you? What would you like? They said, we need your bones. After a short discussion of the pros and cons, he very happily handed over his body. And the reason he gave was that the body has to be abandoned anyway, and it could come at any time. It's like that game Musical Chairs, if you've ever played that. You never know when you go, the music's going to stop and then you don't have a chair. It'll just, it comes abruptly. Cheat death before death cheats you. So really enlightened people like Didichi know this, and they're looking for an opportunity to give of themselves, and he did literally, gave his body, in order to satisfy the Supreme, because it's going to be taken away anyway. So this means all gain, no risk. Whereas in material life, Didichi pointed out, if I just try to hold on to my body, which I can't do anyway, it'll be taken away by force, and then I won't get any credit. So I'll just lose it, that's all. So it's a better strategy. So Dhruva Maharaj attained this momentum in spiritual life that I'm going to attain God, and he ran off. And the next thing that happened was, and this is recounted in the story, that he met a spiritual teacher, the most highly qualified spiritual teacher. And now I'm going to read you the verse because it tells how he met him, how he met the spiritual teacher. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, text number 25. The translation goes like this. The great sage Narada overheard this news, and understanding all the activities of Dhruva Maharaj, he was struck with wonder. He approached Dhruva, and touching the boy's head with his all-virtuous hand, he spoke as follows. So what's happened here is Dhruva Maharaj had this interaction in the palace in which he became completely frustrated, and then he left and met his mother, and his mother said, you'll have to go to the forest. And he left the palace and he was going towards the forest. And now this verse is saying that Narada Muni, who wasn't even in the palace, and he wasn't anywhere near the conversation, overheard it. And here's the explanation given by Srila Prabhupada. When Dhruva Maharaj was talking with his mother, Suniti, of all the incidents that had taken place in the palace, Narada was not present. Thus the question may be raised, how Narada overheard all these topics? The answer is that Narada is Trikalagya. He is so powerful that he can understand the past, future, and present of everyone's heart, just as the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, after understanding the strong determination of Dhruva Maharaj, Narada came to help him. It may be explained in this way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, and as soon as he understands that a living entity is serious about entering devotional service, he sends his representative. In this way, Narada was sent to Dhruva Maharaj. This is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. By the grace of the spiritual master in Krishna, one can enter into devotional service. Because of Dhruva Maharaj's determination, Krishna, the Supersoul, immediately sent his representative, Narada, to initiate him. So, this is a foolproof way in which to get help from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to try for spiritual life and to develop a strong desire within one's heart. In fact, one of the greatest teachers of the process of bhakti yoga has said, Krishna bhakti ras bhavito mati kriyatam yadi kritopi labhyate tatalalyam api mulyam ekalam janmakoti sukritir nalabhyate. And in this verse he says, you can do good deeds in the world for millions of years and it won't qualify you to see God. And then he says there's one qualification by which you can actually become connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One way to attain the Supreme. But because we've run out of time, I won't be able to tell you what that is. And I thank you very much for coming tonight. Only Samyaprash wants to know, so I'll tell him after class. Okay, you and Samyaprash can come after class. You four. He says, tatalolya means if one has an intense greed, which means a red-hot desire to know God. If one has this intensity of purpose to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that's the currency through which one can actually know Him. There's no other way. We already excluded having great wealth or beauty. All these things actually become disqualifications because they're actually illusory. I'm only borrowing these things for a little while. And actually, I may think I'm beautiful, but nobody else does. And it's an illusory concept. But this very primal sense that I have to know God is the means through which one can understand. Tad vignanartam sa gurum eva bigachchet. In fact, the ancient scriptures, the Upanishads, say that one must have a spiritual guide to understand God. And another way to understand that is that one must have an intense desire to understand God. And when one does have that intense desire, then Krishna will give one a proper guide to understand Him. And that's exactly what's happening in this story, is that Dhruva Maharaj had that intensity of purpose, so much so that he didn't even think of any other consequences. He just ran off to find God, come what may. And there was the help immediately. So I might ask sometimes, why is it that although I'm practicing spiritual life, I may not be feeling complete satisfaction, or I might not be seeing God. And the answer to this conundrum is that my desire has not become intense enough. So if one develops this intense desire and a kind of enthusiasm, which is called utsahan by Rupa Goswami, he gives this as a qualification, a great enthusiasm to know God, then naturally Krishna will give help. And so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of the greatest teachers of bhakti of all times, said that don't try to see God, try to act in such a way that God will want to come and see you. What do you think? Does that work for you all? And one of the ways someone might then ask is, how do I act in that way? Well, here's a very commonsensical set of instructions given by an ancient scripture called the Padma Purana. And it says, Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indre Seva Mukhi Hijivado Swayameva Spratida. This is, sounds too simple. But oftentimes, the simplest solution is the most logical or effective. It's known as Occam's razor. So this verse says that the whole process of yoga and of having God want to come to see you starts with, drum roll, the tongue. It starts with the tongue. Someone might say, oh, that sounds too simple. The tongue's just such a, if you take a look at it in the mirror, which you might not have done recently, it seems like such an insignificant little organ. But actually, this is what it's saying, that if you start with your tongue, practice yoga with your tongue, then God will want to come and see you. So what are the ways in which one practices with one's tongue? There's two ways that the tongue operates. One is by making sound vibration. Some of that sound vibration is simply a disturbance to the world. And there's an option, especially for humans, because there's a lot of living entities that have tongues, but they can't do this. They can't make spiritual sound. At least consciously, they can't. If one uses one's tongue to repeat the names of God, and also the special scriptures, the bhakti scriptures that describe God, if one uses one's tongue for that purpose, and also, so that's one way you can use your tongue, and the other way is through tasting only things that have first been offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as a sacrifice. And if you eat food that's only first offered to Krishna, called prasada, and then you use your tongue to make this vibration, the holy vibration of God's names, then this is the gateway to yoga. And by that, if you just do those two things using your tongue, then God will come and reveal himself to you. And that's how to act in such a way that God will want to come and see you. It's practical, right? Doable, right? You could start now. You could just make a decision. I'll only eat things that were first offered to God, and I'll only make a sound with my tongue that glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How's that sound? Practical? Practical. Okay. Of course, there's more to be said about that, but those are basic tenets. And then there's other information in the Bhagavad Gita about how one can live in such a way that one will attract the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so one can read that and just adjust one's life accordingly. And then if one has integrity, which is a very powerful principle in spiritual life, which means that you follow the process, you try to see God even when you're behind closed doors. In other words, you're sincere about the process. You're not making a pretense that I'm a spiritual practitioner, but then secretly you do things that are not in harmony with the spiritual practice. There's a saying in Bengal about drinking water underwater on a fast day. Because some spiritual practitioners on fast days, like today is Ekadashi, some spiritual practitioners for the whole day and night, they don't drink any water. So that's a pretty prestigious thing, because you know, everyone you meet, they'll say, you know, what are you doing today? You want to come over for lunch? And it's like, no, I don't eat. We'll just have a sarsaparilla. And it's like, no, I don't even drink. I wouldn't even drink water. Then the people will think, wow, he's such a elevated sage. But then I go down to the river to take my bath, and while I'm underneath, I dunk my head down and glunk, 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 I drink down the water. This is not integrity. And this means that I haven't realized the principle that actually there's a witness. Krishna's watching my activities. And if I conduct myself in such a way as to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead wherever I am. That's my intention. I work in that way in my life. I organize my life in such a way that, and I realize, at least theoretically, I'm understanding Krishna's watching me, and I adjust myself in that way. Then Krishna will be happy to reveal himself more and more to such a person. So this is the simple path to understand God, and it's non-sectarian. It works everywhere. It has to do with one's sincere approach and one's intensity of desire. You can measure how much advancement you'll make by the intensity of your desire to succeed. And that desire can be increased. There's ways in which you can increase desire. One of the prime methods to increase one's desire is to keep good association with those who already have that desire, because according to the bhakti scriptures, we're all very impressionable. And Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, and he says in the 13th chapter, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. And that is, amazingly, that any good or bad situation that I attain in this world is because of my association. And if you want to develop a strong spiritual desire, you can seek out people who are have that intensity and learn to associate with them in such a way, and then you'll also start to develop that kind of intensity. So this is a foolproof process through which one can feel satisfaction in one's life and also come to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face by following in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, there's a difference between imitation and following in the footsteps. We may not imitate Dhruva Maharaj and simply run out our front door and just keep on walking, but we may adjust our lives and our attitudes in such a way to emulate his sincerity of purpose and his great determination. And if we continue to do that, then we'll be on a fast track in spiritual life. Om Tat Sat. And now we'll take some reflections. Hari Shyam Prabhu.
Thank you for another very wonderful, practical, and inspiring talk. I was particularly touched by your point of hypocrisy in spiritual life, that the person is drinking water underneath. And I think this is one of the most challenging things for a devotee to admit, is his weaknesses. In fact, we see many, in all religious societies, whether it's ours, Christianity, when someone has spiritual difficulty, it's very difficult to kind of share with the world or let people know that we all have this difficulty. So what can you share with us in terms of your personal experience of how do we protect ourselves from being hypocritical, at the same time deal with the fact that we do have this sensitive ego that doesn't want everyone to know that we have these weaknesses?
Yeah.
How do we find a good balance and practical
help? Nice question. They're very helpful. Sharing my weaknesses with the world may be too much to ask. But sharing them with an intimate person that I trust is actually recommended. This is a principle given by Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita, one of the concise teachings, a book that gives the concise teachings of bhakti. And in it he says, Kuyamakyati Prishti. You should have at least one associate in the world who, with whom you can reveal your innermost secrets. And that person should be an advanced spiritual practitioner who can absorb that and give good advice. The great Chaitanya Charan, disciple of Radhanath Swami, who lectures here, there, and has been here, mentions that oftentimes there's a way in which, in fact, he asked the question, how is it that a very advanced spiritual person might fall down? It seems contradictory. How could such an advanced person fall down? Sometimes that question happens because there are accidents, as Prabhupada says, even on the royal roads. And his analysis was profound, I thought, and that was that oftentimes when someone becomes advanced spiritually, then people regard that person as spiritually advanced, and then that becomes a part of the person's persona. And they partly don't want to let people down by telling the world that maybe I have an anarta that grew up in my heart while I was becoming spiritually advanced that I need to deal with. And partly they might, out of false ego, of course, maybe the same thing. But fact is, they're protective. They don't want to dispel the idea that I'm very spiritually advanced. Even though the person is spiritually advanced, it's possible that an anarta can grow up within one's heart. This we know because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions that even as you water the seed of bhakti, he said it will grow through the coverings of the universe, penetrate the Viraja River, go all the way to the Goloka Vrindavan planet and entwine itself at the lotus feet of Krishna. And he said, even then you have to continue hearing and chanting and keeping good association. Because being embodied and in the environment of the material world is a dangerous, it's a dangerous environment. And so he said that very spiritually advanced people who then somehow or other develop an anarta, and then they don't have an outlet. They have no one to tell to. They don't want to tell it to the world, and they may not have a friend close enough to reveal that to and then take help. And therefore, then they succumb. The anarta grows. And to a point where they can't deny it anymore. Therefore, he recommended that everyone should have at least one spiritual advisor, at least one, who is confidential enough that one can reveal one's heart and say, yes, this is a problem I'm having. And if you're with somebody who's genuinely advanced spiritually and you're able to reveal that, then by the light of consciousness, just bringing it to light and discussing it with such a person, one can then deal with that anarta and actually overcome it. So this is a very important principle in spiritual life. Guhyamakyatipricchati. You have to have close friendships with advanced devotees. At least one. And also, it's important to develop to become vulnerable enough to reveal your mind. It's good to practice that and see that you survive. In fact, I've noticed that people who are more vulnerable and who reveal their minds become more celebrated. Because everyone knows that the material world is a precarious place and that there are anartas that grow up in the heart, and someone who's just honest about it actually becomes regarded as a more spiritually advanced person because they also have the quality of honesty to be able to say, oh yeah, I'm not that advanced, or you know, I do have this singular problem, how do I deal with it? And this is a quality which Krishna mentions called simplicity. Just be simple and don't try to be guarded. I remember once Gaur Govinda Maharaj mentioned that sometimes in a class someone might have a doubt and they want to bring it up, but then they think, well, I won't bring it up because if I bring it up everyone will think that I'm actually like not very advanced spiritually or that I didn't know the answer. He said, this is the opposite of being simple. This person is a rascal. He'll never advance in spiritual life. But be simple and be vulnerable and be willing to, or at least practice, take some steps towards opening your heart so that others can help you, because there are people that will help you. And if you simply cover it up and remain guarded about it, then you simply have to live with it. What else? Yes. Here comes the mic.
Taking the question to the next level, I would say, like Srila Rupa Goswami is saying that we have to confide, to someone who we really trust. But what about in a society, like in a ISKCON society perspective, suppose someone comes and tells me something,
trust me, and I know that by keeping it confidential, it hurt the larger society. So, the anartha is so large that it can hurt the society and devotees in general. Then what should be my position?
Your position in that case would be, in my humble opinion, the best action then would be to go to other spiritually advanced leaders and have a discussion with them about what to do. Because when you meet with mature spiritual leaders and you discuss such things, then at least there can be a good plan to help overcome that sticky situation.
So someone I trust, I should go, then that's not breaking the principle, right?
No. Well, I mean, even in the secular world, there's such a thing as, like, there's attorney-client privilege between, like, an attorney. If you pay an attorney, then he's supposed to keep everything secret. Or your psychologist is supposed to keep confidence and not tell everybody everything. But if a client comes to you and says, I'm going to go out and commit murder tomorrow, and I already bought the duct tape, and I have a shotgun and stuff like that, then you have a duty to go and tell somebody and make sure that it gets expressed. So it depends on the level of the severity of the situation. Yes. Okay. 1, 2.
To review one's mind in confidence to those that are spiritually advanced. So in my mind, I keep complaining or thinking, okay, I need to talk about this. But then when you meet the advanced spiritual devotees, then the problem at that time doesn't seem that big. And you're like, it doesn't matter, I can continue. And then again, when you go on or when you just gone, the problem comes back again. And it doesn't matter, it's like you get the bliss of association. Hmm. But then again, can you deal with this?
Write an email before they come to see you. Yeah, you know, devotees have recounted how they used to have all kinds of problems and they bring in the Prabhupada, and as soon as they get in the room, they go like, oh, never mind. Doesn't seem like such a big thing. But it is important to practice these things. If there are things that are bothering you, you should practice bringing it up regularly. It's very therapeutic. It's important for spiritual life. You should have confidence that you can reveal these things to on a regular basis. That's why I mentioned before, practice doing it and bring it up. And they may tell you it's no big deal, and then it may dissipate, or it may turn out that they can bring some light to it so that it doesn't keep coming up and may give you tools so you can deal with it the next time. But practice it. It's guhyamakati prichti. It's highly recommended by Rupa Goswami. He says, practice this. Reveal your mind to like-minded, spiritually advanced people. And that will help you. And that's the essence of our Krishna consciousness movement, is to develop, to have groups of devotees that feel confident enough to come together with one another and talk about what's really going on in their lives. That's why Prabhupada said that this movement is based on love and trust. I mean, when you have that, you have something very tangible and solid and important. I mean, anybody can put up buildings here and there and devise a bunch of rules and regulations and stuff like that. But until you actually have a sangha where devotees can come together and discuss the philosophy thoroughly threadbare and then also bring out their own anarthas. And I've seen this happen at our house in California. My wife, Nirakula, who's behind the camera back here, she's the camera person. And I live in a house in California. And for 16 years, we had regular programs at our house. And I saw how devotees actually really wanted to get things off their chest. They come And we'd sit, we'd hear and chant. And after some time, when the devotees developed what they considered safe relationships, where they felt like, okay, among friends, and it's confidential, what goes on, what we speak about here, they feel safe, have a safe environment. And they bring things up, and they bring their doubts up. And then the doubts would get dissipated in that kind of a sangha. And there, I would see that, especially in those sessions where the devotees were able to bring up their doubts and then have them be dealt with by more advanced devotees, then afterwards we have a kirtan, and practically the roof would be blown off the house because the devotees were so unburdened, they'd be so happy that I don't have to carry that burden around anymore. So this is an essential part of spiritual life, so you can practice it. Yes.
We have one from our online, one of our online viewers, Kate Maininger. She's asking, in relation to the controlling tongue, how can we offer food when we are not at home? I am very busy work. I have a very busy work schedule, and I am on the road for work. I buy vegetarian food when I do not bring my lunch, and sometimes when I'm hungry, I'll get food while I'm out. How can I offer it and make it prasadam while on the road?
Thank you, Kate. Good to hear from you. One thing is, I mean, invest in really good Tupperware and things like that where you can carry prasadam. I mean, that's the first, that's the best kind of solution. You know, whenever we fly anywhere, we always make sure we bring prasadam. I, you know, long flights. It's always funny, too, because the flight attendants are bringing around, you want to buy some food? No thanks. And they're like, why? And they're like, I brought my own. Like, how'd you do that? It's like, this is how we live. I always realize what an opulent life devotees have. It's like, we always have food. I mean, wherever we go, we have the best of food. And it's you know, it's one of the smartest things that you can do is make arrangements ahead of time, whether you have to freeze it or whatever, to make sure you bring your own prasadam, because eating out is such a pain. What I call eating out is, I call it insult to injury, because it's like buying food from people who have wicked minds who cooked it is injury, and then you got to pay for it on top of it. There's the injury and then comes the insult. So you know, go out of your way to make sure that you have prasadam. You can cook it ahead of time. There are people who are really expert at that, you know, and get some advice from them. But if you do have to, if you're out, my wife's looking at me like, answer the question. if you do happen to be out and about, and I mean, Kate's an EMT. She has, you know, 2 days in a row where she may not sleep and she has to save people who are dying and all these kinds of things. So yeah, it might happen. So what you have to do is get the most innocent of all things that you can get and check 3 times to make sure what's in it and offer it to the Lord. And if you don't, if you're in the back of an ambulance and you don't have that, offer it to the Lord in your mind. And this is a very dangerous thing to say in a public forum, but I do have precedent for it. When Jadu Thakur received mangoes from the great eater of all remnants in Bengal, Kalidas. Kalidas brought him mangoes. I'm not going to go into the whole story now, but just, it's a beautiful story, but Kalidas brought mangoes to Jadu Thakur. It is mentioned that Jadu Thakur offered them to Krishna within his mind and then took them. You have to do the best you can in all circumstances, you know, to offer it up to Krishna. These kinds of instructions, I say, are dangerous because then someone might say, oh yeah, okay, there's a bag of chips. Okay. I was once walking with a godbrother. We were circumambulating Vrindavan and he wanted to go visit this sacred tree. And it was way off the path and it was, you know, I kind of wanted to get back for the Guru Puja and things like that. It's early in the morning, and he's a real enthusiast for taking off into the woods to see special things. And I was like, I'll just do it by meditation in my mind. He goes, that's fine, as long as when we get back and it's time for prasadam, you take prasadam in your mind too. So you have to be a little consistent. But offer everything. Krishna says, patram pushpam palam toyam. He also says, yakodoshi arashnashi as johosi didasiyat. Offer everything to me. So if you take some food, then, my dear Lord Krishna, I know this isn't ideal, but from my heart, please accept this. It's all I have right now. It's all I can eat. Please take it. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, in the class you said about feeling helpless and volume, it is great. And you also said that the way we develop that is by associating with strong devotees. So sometimes it appears that we are associating with very spiritual advanced devotees, but somehow that feeling of helplessness and intensity doesn't appear in our heart. So is it because do we need something else apart from that, or we are not associating well?
Well, that could be a point that you said, we're not associating well. So there's three principles of association that are vital. And one is that you should be very humble before advanced devotees. Pranipat, you should offer yourself. Another is that you should offer service. And this is very important because when you offer service and you very humbly submit yourself before advanced devotees, then their heart opens. And then the contents of their heart comes out to you. And then finally you should inquire and ask them, how should I conduct my life? It doesn't just mean physical proximity, but it means the attitude in which we approach advanced devotees. And these three are very important elements. And if we keep them in mind when we associate with devotees, then it can be very helpful. Also, just as I mentioned in the beginning, being introspective. Prabhupada wrote a letter to a person, a businessman, who was wrote him back in the early 60s, and he was asking how to advance in spiritual life. Prabhupada said, you have to introspect yourself within yourself. But the point was, you have to introspect. And I mentioned an exercise in the beginning of noticing how you're helpless. And, you know, that means when you practice your sadhana, do it deeply. Think very carefully about what you're doing and why you're doing it. When, for instance, it can be a great treat every day to enter into this mentality of realizing how helpless you are and then calling out to Krishna. And as I said, it's simply a matter of understanding reality, taking a moment to center yourself and see what situation am I actually in right now. Hare Krishna. I think we have to stop. So I'll answer this last question really quick because you had your hand up and Ty goes to the runner.
Thank you so much for taking the class. This idea of controlling the tongue, in times of my devotional career, I've been trying to get really real about this. You know, and the idea of realizing how wicked my mind can be in this idea, you know, of controlling my gracious tongue. Like these formulas that are recipes that are being backed by these large companies, like, you know, like, say, Breyer's ice cream or something, you know. It's a formula, it's being backed by this gigantic company. Can I take that and, you know, offer that to Krishna? Is that something that can be offered to Krishna and I'd still be, controlling my tongue? Not just prayers, like, say I really like yeah. Lion Punch or something. You know? Can I take that and offer it to Krishna? Is that offered?
Well, there are lower levels and higher levels. The highest level Prabhupada gave us, which was to make everything yourself. That's the first class way to make preparations for Krishna, is to get the ingredients yourself and offer them, and offer those ingredients. But there are other ways, there are other compromise ways. Yes, you should offer everything, but don't make a religion out of it. Try to do the first class thing, and if you can't, then you can do other things. something like Dhanavir Maharaj will give the Siddhanta on this. After all, Breyer's ice cream does have a Tulsi leaf on the package, so. Check with Breyer's, yeah.
To find out which particular flavors have animal products and which don't have animal products.
Yeah. It can be very revealing. Because oftentimes, I've seen, anyway, I won't go into details. But yeah, check. Measure 9 times, cut once. Be careful. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Dhruva Maharaj ki jai, Dhanavir Maharaj ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol, Shishi Radha Govinda ji ki jai, Shishi Gonikai ki jai, Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ji ki jai, Gaur Premanande Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Hari Bol Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Vanchakalpataruscha Kripasanabeva Chapatitanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavebyo Namo.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.